Okay, well, hello everybody. Bienvenidos todos. This is a, I guess you, should we call it a special edition of Spanglish Seminary?
Yeah, you can say that.
But it is special. We have our friend here, Marcos Rodriguez. So we gotta enunciate the R like Marcos. You gotta, roll our R's here.
Rogelio
Robles. So, for those who don't know, this is Spanglish Seminary. And what are we, Roger? We have it here. It's a podcast centered on La Experiencia Latina in the Church, about the space in between Spanish and English, Catholics and Aleluyas, and Latin America y el Norte. And I think today we're going to focus more on Latin America y el Norte. And so my brother Roger's here.
What's up, guys?
And my friend Marcos is here.
Marcos. Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Anyways. It's Dr. Nick.
Is that from
Simpsons?
The Simpsons? Okay.
Are you able to say The Simpsons?
We can say, Simpsons in our religious podcast. Okay.
No. Oh. Copyright.
Oh, no, yeah, I don't know. Good. That's good.
You're good. You can say it.
We weren't.
You can mention it. We just can't.
We weren't.
Profit off of it?
Yeah. Okay. Which we're not.
I think we're good. No, not yet. Yeah, I think we're good. We can have a Simpsons reference and it'll be fine. So I guess the thing on our mind that we were talking about this week was the issue with DACA and the Trump administration deciding to take it away. I guess, what is it, in 6 months or?
They have 6 months. Congress has 6 months to come up with a solution.
Yeah.
To make something permanent for the Dreamers.
And it's an unfair thing. I mean, there's a lot of marches happening. There's a lot of resources happening for people, and I think it's something that we wanted to talk about that aspect of Latin America and El Norte, and kind of share our stories of immigration. I mean, my brother and I were both born here. Where were you born, Marcus?
I was born in Mexico.
Do you know what part?
I'm not sure if I was born in Mexico City or if I was born in Cuernavaca, Morelos. Okay. I can't really say for certain.
Have you seen your birth certificate?
No. Oh, I have it. I've never actually read it though. Right. Like, okay. I have it. Yeah, I have
you
it.
Should.
I
should.
So you might be a Chilango.
I might be a Chilango, which explains a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. You might be.
Check
just
your pockets. Check your pockets.
Just might be a Chilango. Okay, we'll get that on us, and then we'll update the people. Yes. If you guys want to know, we'll update soon. If he's from what, Cuernavaca?
Cuernavaca or from
DF.
From DF? Okay, we'll find out. Okay, so we'll go around, and we're going to kind of share our stories a little bit, and then talk about that. Oh, I'm not going to go first. You're the guest today. You're the special guest. Dr. Marcos Rodriguez. I'm prophesying over you. I'm just kidding.
Trigger warning.
Okay. let's not talk about prophesying yet. Yes. Okay. So yeah, tell us your story. How did you get to El Norte?
Well, I was sharing with Rogelio and Juan earlier. My story sometimes feels a little bit offensive to the people who actually struggled and had a dire need to get here. My story is a little bit different. I feel like when we lived in Mexico, we were pretty well off. We had a store, we had a taxi business. We just ended up traveling here to California for my cousin's quinceañera. And, family, Mexican families always have, little bickerings here and there. And I don't really know the details of what happened between my mom and my tía, but basically my tía told my mom, you wouldn't last out here if you tried to stay. And my mom, being the strong, independent Mexican lady that she is, she had to prove her wrong. So in the next, 3 months, we uprooted our lives and we crossed the border.
Just because she said
she wouldn't be able to make it out here.
Yeah.
And she treated us pretty badly. I do remember that. My mom would go, do whatever, and me and my sister, we'd be the entire day without eating. They wouldn't look out for us. We were just off to the side. So I'm sure all of those things, like, contributed to my mom feeling that way and, like, feeling like she had to prove herself. But it's not like we needed, like, we needed to escape a situation or poverty or, you know, it was kind of just on the fly. And here we are.
So that's it. It's
4 years later. 24. I'm 26. I got here when I was 10.
That's right.
So, I mean, without giving, I'm like looking behind my shoulder to see if my mom is there. But it's not, you know, we have a similar. I was born here. I was, you know, born in El, what's it called in East LA? What's the General Hospital?
Guaymemora?
Was it Guaymemora? It's right there in East LA. It's the one in East LA. It's White Memorial or
the all woman one, right?
Yeah, there's like two hospitals right next to each
other.
Which
is the all woman one?
Oh, I don't know. Are we Angelinos?
I don't know anything past the past that side of the LA. But anyways, it's interesting because we joke around. I mean, my brother and I were raised without fathers and. You know, I don't know if she, again, this sounds similar to my mom in the attitude and the stubbornness that I guess they need to survive, if we're honest. But she said, one of the things she says that she didn't, one of the reasons she didn't get married, because we joke with her, like, hey, how come we were raised without parents, you know? She goes, yo no quería un viejo que me dijera lo que hacer.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want no man to tell me what to do. So that's why I didn't get married. Which, whatever, she might not be saying the truth or not, but it's just funny that it's when you tell me the story of your mom and that stubbornness and that will to survive, it sounds like my mom.
They have to be chingonas.
Yeah, they have to. That's one of the things that I've heard that people say that. So they have to be in order to survive. And same thing with I was born here and we left pretty when I was, I think, 6 months. I was pretty young. I might have been a year. I don't remember at the moment. But
where did you guys go?
We went to my grandpa's house in Mexico and.
What part? The Guadalajara?
Guadalajara in Jalisco. And I was raised there till I was 8. And so I came out here. I was young and I started, I think, 2nd grade or 3rd grade. I think it was 3rd grade when I came out here. So what was that? 8 or 9?
Yeah, yeah, around there.
8 or 9. So I didn't speak any English. Spoke nothing but Spanish.
Really?
Yeah, Spanish was my first language. And
Oh, that's crazy. That's right.
And then I, over time, learned. But I remember how hard it was. Because I had to have someone. We've known each other. How long have we known each other?
Over 10 years.
Over 10 years. We have, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. It's been over 10 years.
Oh, God. Where does the time go? So all that to say, there was something. Talk about your struggles, because obviously you weren't born here and you. Did you know? How old were you when you found out that you were undocumented?
I think I was a junior in high school. I was in a program called AVID, and we started filling out college applications. And they were showing us, like, they were walking us how to go through, like, financial aid and, like, all of that stuff. And I went home, and I knew I was born here. I wasn't born here. I knew that. I just didn't know what all, like, that meant.
Yeah.
And I went home, and I was like, hey, Mom, like, I need my Social Security number because I need to put it on my college application. And she kind of looked at me like, what are you talking about?
See, social kid?
Yeah.
What's it's a social?
Yeah. Like, I think I kind of grew up like a little bit in a bubble.
Yeah.
In a kind of, I want to say fantasy world. You know, I was like heavily involved with the church. Yeah. And the church that I grew up in, it was like predominantly white. So I surrounded myself with like white people. And like, I didn't really understand the realities of what my life was coming up to be. And I didn't understand, like, what not having a Social Security number meant. I didn't understand that I wasn't going to be able to get a job. So when she told me, like, you don't have one, like, it kind of crushed me. And any attempt to, like, get my requirements for college, I was just like, well, what's the point? I'm not going to be able to. So I took all my electives and try to get out of high school as fast as I could, and I started working right after. Yeah.
And how many years did it take for you to? Because you just recently last year, right? You
well,
were
I I got a work permit and a visa in 2013, but surprisingly, I didn't get it through DACA. I didn't get it through deferred action. I got it through something called a U visa.
Did you qualify though? Like,
I did.
You would have qualified for DACA.
I would have qualified, okay. And I did apply.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got rejected from deferred action because I had already gotten a status through something else. I just didn't know because I hadn't actually received the paperwork. But yeah, I got something called a U visa, and if I had gotten my work permit and my social security number through deferred action, I would be in the same place that a lot of these dreamers are. So
it's
crazy. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's just rough because of the way that it was done, where, I mean, we obviously know and we can see what's kind of happening. Like what I see this administration, and not just, I think if Donald Trump was impeached, I think that the issues would still be there.
I think it may be worse.
Yeah, it might be worse. So some of the things that I'm seeing is that he just seems to be kind of getting rid of everything that Obama did. And that's kind of gotten him popularity. Like, he's not doing anything to make the country better, or quote unquote make America great.
Well, it depends who you ask.
Right, it depends who you ask. But right, he's making it great for certain people. But even then, he's not.
Not really.
I think he's just using that. And so that's what's scary. Like, I think everybody kind of knew that he was gonna take away DACA because from what it seems, he's taking away everything. Anything and everything that he can take away, from environmental stuff to like NASA things, anything that has to do with
LGBTQ rights, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anything that has to do with the previous administration, he's just kind of getting rid of it, and it's harming a lot of people. So in regards to DACA, I do know that there's a lot of great resources out there. I mean, I was reading that there's a certain deadline for people that they can still extend it, right? They have like an extra year.
It depends on when your permit expires. I believe it expires. I don't want to say a date because I don't want to give wrong information, but I believe it's October 5th. If it expires before then, you can still apply to get one more renewal.
Like an extra year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I know, and it's affecting a lot of people. Like, I mean, I think the majority of people are in California, and they're Latinos, Latino, Latinas. But I was reading there's people from, like, the Caribbean.
Oh, yeah.
And people from Africa that applied for it. So there's quite a few people that applied for the deferred action.
Yeah.
And it just, for it to be taken away. So here's the thing. And again, now we're delving into, like, our opinions and our politics, but it just feels like he's doing it to put pressure on Congress to be able to, like, get something else from them, to, you know, throw something more on them, which that's one of the reasons Obama did it, where he had to make a decision because Congress was just kept going in circles and not doing anything to help. I mean, these kids were brought over, you know, at a young age. I mean, how old were you when you came?
I was two.
Yeah, you were two, and, you know, you don't. You know, from one of the things that I was reading is, like, NAFTA, the trade agreement that was done. I remember that growing up. I mean, I was in elementary school during the Bush, not the Bush administration, the Clinton, I think.
No,
that was in high school.
I was in high school
during the Clinton administration. Mm-hmm. And that's when I remember NAFTA. That's the earliest that I can remember NAFTA, but I know it did a lot of damage to as far as jobs and people having to come over here.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that always strikes me about that the existence of borders, you know, whatever you want to say about it, how ridiculous the concept is, but to create you create that the problem. So, like, one of the things my mom would always say, and a lot of people that I knew, you know, when we moved around a lot, and we would always live with different primos or primas, cousins that were undocumented, that had just crossed over, and hearing the stories of people thinking that the streets were made of gold, and, you know, thinking that there was just, like, there is opportunity. Sure, it's the land of opportunity, but the reason it's the land of opportunity is because it's taken from other countries. Like, it's like forced. You know, there's this myth that, hey, everything's better in El Norte. And I mean, I'm just ranting now, but
I mean, it may be better than where you were, but it doesn't. It still doesn't come easy,
right?
Which is the common.
But the reason that it's my thing is like the reason that it's better, it's because of, you know, like for Mexico, you know, the land that was taken in the Mexican American War, and like my for example, my grandfather came over here with the Braceros program to work, and. Work the coal mines.
Yeah.
And then, you know, during all that stuff, he was sent back after the job was done. And so that's one of the reasons that we came over here. My mom came over here in the first place, and that I happened to be born here, because that connection to El Norte was already made because of my grandfather. My mom was raised by her father, and my grandmother passed away while giving birth to my mom. So, like, those are the stories that we carry with ourselves. And so there's this myth of everything's better in El Norte, but the reason it's better is because El Norte, quote unquote, kind of took from these countries and takes resources and takes, you know, or like with deportation, like deporting gang members to Central America, to Honduras, like what happened in Honduras because of the United States deporting people mm-hmm. to Honduras, and it's a real violent place now because there's American, I mean, you know, estadounidenses, you know, cholos or gang members that are over there, and they keep being cholos over there.
Right. Yeah.
And so it harms. So I think I want to talk about that, like that, the myth of that, the myth of, yes, it is better. Yes, here we are in front of our computer with our Mac, with our laptop and with our microphone and all that. But it never. I'll never forget that it came because of other people. That it comes because, you know, a Chinese worker worked for very cheap to make this product or to make this microphone. And so we're indebted to a lot of people. And I just went on a rant, but you know what I mean? It just reminds me of that, of why we're here in the first place.
It is better. It is. There are a lot of opportunity, but I think it always comes at a very high price. Whether it's, like you were saying, some worker in another country being way underpaid, or whether it's two parents working and arriving one day at their work while it's right, being raided. That actually did happen to my mom.
Yeah.
She actually just missed being deported. She, for some reason, she was going to work late that day, and she pulled up at the factory, and there was an immigration raid, and a lot of people didn't make it back. And even the way that we got our visa, it was because she was a victim of domestic violence. And other than that, there would have been no other path for us to become legal here, quote unquote legal.
Right.
Everything comes here at a very high price, whether it's family time or resources or your spirit.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's very hard.
This is kind of a funny thing, but it was funny at the time, but as I got older, I realized how difficult it must be to live under that constant fear of deportation. Like, we were, when we lived on Pico Boulevard, like West LA, when I was younger, when I went to elementary school, and, there was a time when Roger's dad lived with us, and me and him went to, it was John's Market, which is like West LA. It's still there. John's. It's I really saw one the other day.
Are you serious?
See, about John's, JONS, John's Market. And it looked like Vons, but it was like an unfinished Vons, and it was just a J instead of a, but se llamaba John's Market, whatever.
John.
But there was a guy selling cassette tapes outside. I'm dating myself, right? That was in the cassettes. And there was, había un grupo que se llamaba La Migra. There was a band called La Migra.
Yeah.
And oh, was it my uncle? I don't know. It doesn't matter. But I remember, the way I remember the story, I was like, look, mira, tienen aquí, mira La Migra.
Oh,
I said, La Migra. And I said, look, La Migra, whatever. And like a bunch of people turned around.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh no, like really? Like, La Migra's here. And you know, we laughed about it or whatever, but as I get older, like, you do realize that there's a constant fear of that.
It's no joke.
And so it's hard all around. And I think, you know, going back to DACA, like, to kind of be given this hope and then only for it to be taken away in that way, I think it's just cruel, and it's something that, you know, definitely needs to be talked about, and you know, they need to be taken care of. At least that's what's at stake at the moment. And you said, did you have some resources or?
I did. This is probably gonna go up. Well, actually, I know it's gonna go up after this, but there's actually a march in MacArthur Park tomorrow.
Which is what day is that?
Tomorrow is August 10th. I think.
So. Yeah. August 10th. This is going to be up on the 12th.
Yeah. So it's going to happen afterwards. There's going to be a lot of demonstrations, a lot of activity. I think it's actually being like promoted and pushed by Undocu Media. I really do. Like, I've marched before, but only because it affected me directly. This doesn't affect me in the same way. But I do encourage people to, like, get out there and... seriously, like, show your support. This is a huge thing, in many aspects. It is gonna cripple our economy. I mean, Dreamers contribute so much.
Oh yeah,
it's gonna cripple lives and families. It's gonna destroy a lot of hope. It's so heartbreaking. I can relate to them. I mean, I only just had a legal status here a few years ago, but. There was a period of time last year where my work permit was expiring, and we were eligible to apply for our permanent residency, and it was kind of in limbo. It costs a lot of money. There were just a lot of circumstances that were really hard, and reliving that uncertainty of, like, I've already made so much progress. I've already been able to do these things that you can do as a quote unquote American. And to be, like, stripped of all that is terrifying. I don't know if any or either of you ever grew up feeling this way, but you feel like you're not enough in either culture. Like, you're not Mexican enough to get deported back to Mexico and feel like you can survive. And you don't feel American enough to feel accepted by the people in this country.
Yeah.
Welcome to, that's why I'm like, this is a good commercial for Welcome to Spanglish Seminary. It's a good introduction. It's that. And so I think for us, you know, Latinos, I mean, in a theology book, it was from Justo Gonzalez. He talks about Hispanic theology, but Hispanic in the word of Spanish speaking specifically, and the idea that we understand what it is to exist in the in-between place, in the in-between of, you know, in that context, it's in between, you know, life and getting in heaven. I mean, it's, we'll talk about the theology of heaven some other day, but it's, you know, it's not a place to reach, but the idea of being in between, that you know that you're not home yet. And so for us, we understood, I mean, being born here, but being raised in Mexico, I understand. For a long time, I've understood that I don't belong here fully, and you get into, like, this identity struggle, and then you don't belong in Mexico either, because you don't roll your R's, you don't, you know, speak correctly, you don't know everything culturally.
Or you make up Spanish words.
You make up Spanish
words. Like English. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's where I like to talk about the idea. For me, instead of using the word Hispanic, I think it's just, it's more of the idea of Spanglish as a language, of that in-between place where, you know, like for Pentecostals and the idea of speaking in tongues, right? That you speak in tongues and it's a language that only God can understand. And it's an unknown tongue. It's a language, and it speaks to the idea of wanting to be understood and wanting to be heard, to where Spanglish is, again, it doesn't belong anywhere. It doesn't belong in quote unquote America, and it doesn't belong in Mexico.
Right.
And yeah, it might. I mean, and it might work. You're able to move back and forth, and we're able to. I think they call it code switching, where you're able to kind of change the way you speak a little bit, and you kind of belong in a certain place, and you can change the way you speak in another place, and you're able to move, navigate between two places, but you don't belong in either of them. You don't fully belong, And that might be just us, or it might, you know, but the feeling is very real, and the experience of life is very real, of not feeling like you belong. So
no, and it's, I think it's true to what you're saying. It's like a real identity crisis. And when this whole thing started, when Donald Trump got elected and they started making a big push against like immigration reform and blocking all that stuff that we thought we were making progress on, there, I did hear cases about young dreamers who didn't have a status, who did, I think one of the kids actually did commit suicide because he just didn't want to live a life in Mexico. He didn't feel like that's where he belonged. And that kind of takes me back to the resources that we were talking about that I kind of sidetracked on. I'm going to be sharing some links with you, some, so you can post it up when you put up the podcast. There is a call being made to people in the mental health field. It's a real thing. It's basically like a sign-up sheet. If you are able to offer any resources, any help that you'd like to offer for free, it's actually something that's being done along the country. Yeah. And it's, I think it's, I forget the name of the school, but one of my coworkers, it's her alma mater, and they're creating a network of support for the dreamers. It's also, there's also a call being made for lawyers for pro bono work. Again, I think it's really important to make a push to support this. I can't imagine what they're feeling at this moment. It has to be heart shattering.
Yeah, the feeling of not knowing what your future holds. I mean, we've seen the videos and of some dreamers, you know, breaking down and not knowing what your future holds. So that's, we definitely want to, you know, be there for them and help the people out that we know, and reach out if you do know any of them. Mm-hmm. If you don't, you know, there's a lot of resources to help, and we'll post some of the links for sure. For you, Roger, anything that you'd like to share? I know seeing you grow up, because I'm, what, 12 years older than you?
Yeah.
12 years older. I mean, seeing him grow up and having to grow up so fast and having to translate and having to, you know, you're always the translator. I think that was, talk a little bit about that and your experience.
Yeah. I grew up in South Central. It was only me, you and my mom. I grew up with a couple of friends. We did move around a lot, so I really had
to.
Make...
You were born in what, 2000?
No.
I mean, I'm thinking of my son.
1992.
I'm thinking of my kids. It's all. You were born in, yeah. You were born in 92. I was 12.
92. Yeah.
And then I know we moved South Central, West LA.
And then I don't think you were in the picture, but we moved to
Bell,
then Montebello. Then I moved to Crenshaw, and then I went back to Downey. So, and then I visited Alaska. So we moved around a lot. And then once you left, I did have to grow up. I was around 12, 13. I would miss school to go translate for my mom whenever she needed to go to like the Social Security, or when she needed to go to any other building.
Yeah.
Or anywhere that she can speak English. We didn't have a car, so we would have to take the bus. Even for that, that was hard for her because, you know, the bus driver would tell her something and then I would have to translate for her. She wouldn't understand.
Did I tell you, you were young. We were crossing the street one time. This is funny, but it could have gotten really bad. We were crossing the street and this lady's going to make a left turn while we're walking into the street, right? And so the lady just hand signals, like, go ahead, right? And my mom misunderstood that and took offense to the hand signal of go ahead.
Like, maybe she felt like she was rushing her?
Yeah, I don't know. But she teen gesture or something. Yeah. And so my mom starts cursing in English to the best of her ability, flipping her off. And like, no, you, blah, 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 and starts cussing at her. And I'm trying to tell her, like, mom, no, like, she was just telling you to go ahead. And the lady got obviously very upset, and she kind of, like, she didn't, like, it wasn't close to hitting us. We were already past her, but she drove by us really fast and basically is like, I'll run you and your kids over. Like, I don't care.
Oh, wow.
And so just those things, like, they're funny now, but,
yeah,
you know, just coming and thinking of growing up that way and, you know, yeah, right. She never, us having to move around because we're always trying to find stable, my mom was always trying to find a stable job.
Yeah.
And I mean, nothing against her. I mean, she did her best. We always
She did her very best.
And it's just, I mean, just thinking about it now, like, you know, for us, even just having papers, how it could be for someone that doesn't have papers and trying to, you can't get student loans.
No.
You can't. Like, that's another thing that gets me mad, that a lot of people say that, oh, they're taking all these resources, but they can't.
No, they can't.
They don't qualify for food stamps. They don't qualify for welfare. Like, I'll testify to it, like, we were on food stamps. We were on we were on welfare. And it's not enough. It's enough for you to, like, not die.
But it's not enough for you to thrive.
You can't open a business. You can't pay your bills. You can't. Like, a lot of the stuff that they give people beef over, like the Obama phone and, like, everything they call Obama, like those are just things so that you don't die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't, like, start a business. You can't go to college in that way. You can't. Like, you have to give up a lot of things for you to be able to thrive. And.
Yeah.
I don't know. And that's another thing. Like, I can go for days about this stuff. Like, these are just, you know, opinions. But just thinking about that and all the different options that you might have, may or might not have. It's just hard all around. So, yeah, we'll definitely post some of the resources for people. And if you know anyone that is struggling in that and you know, that... Or find the dreamer and ask them how they're doing and see how you can help them.
I've seen people actually starting to open up, like, their homes to dreamers and, like, sponsor them and donate money. I'm going to share this link with you. The ACLU also has a sign up where you can donate so that dreamers can get free legal advice and legal help. And you can also, on that same link, I believe you can... it gives you, like, contact information for your representative.
I know there's some people that are paying the... It's, like, $450 to reapply for people that are able to.
Yes.
There's people that are raising money to do that. And so, yeah, the links are out there if you do want to help, if it's in your heart to help.
And I did want to just re-clarify what I said earlier. Your work permit is valid up until October 5th. I'm sorry. Your work permit is still valid until it expires, and if it expires before March 5th, that's when you're still eligible to apply, but you have to do it before October 5th of this year. So it's not as easy as just coming up with $450 bucks. So they really do need the support. That's really what I want to just really emphasize.
There's resources out there, and it's not a hopeless situation. It's hard. And it makes you want to feel hopeless, but I think that's one of the things that... One of the reasons why we wanted to do this is... So if there is anyone out there and, you know, and encourage people to, you know... You should be connected. You should find some way to help. There is a way to help if you do desire to. And it's just hard all around.
Yeah. If you haven't marched before, if you haven't donated before, if you haven't supported before in any way, I feel like...
I've seen people, like, even say there's resources to call your congressman.
Yes.
As well. I mean, for us in California, there's a law that Governor Jerry Brown could pass that could protect dreamers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of different ways. It's kind of like what happened with I don't know the original name, but what people call Obamacare, like how that was stopped. Affordable Health Care Act. How that was stopped. It's still ongoing because of, you know, the Republicans weren't able to make a decision. But so even, you know, I'm hoping, I'm praying that maybe something like this similar happens where they're able to do that. But it's just not, it's just difficult for Latinos at the moment. And I mean, it reminds me of the whole thing with Joe Arpaio being pardoned and what he did against Latinos and pulling people over just because you were brown and asking if you were, you know, and putting people in tents and, you know, just inhumane, you know, treatments of jail and the benefits of that. I mean, that's a whole other podcast for another day about that, but there is something we can do, and us sharing our stories, you know, of immigration, hopefully it inspires some of you guys to want to help as well. Anything else you'd like to share?
No, just seriously get involved. That's all I can. That's what's driving me right now. Like, I really want to get involved and stop saying what I'm going to do and, like, actually start doing it.
Yeah, but all there's yeah, practice what you preach, put your money where your mouth is, all those things.
Yeah, all of the cliches.
All of the cliches apply here. Who wants the last word? Somebody send the people off with.
You want me to finish my story?
Oh, did I cut you off?
Yeah, but it's okay.
What did I? Oh, because I have crossed.
Yeah. I mean, no, you do that
because
often,
of the crossing, yeah. The crossing thing. Yeah. So because I'm not interviewing someone today, because you know Mark Barcos is a friend, I don't have to just you know stay quiet. And so I do apologize. I am trying and I'm learning.
No,
to,
you're good. Don't
so
worry.
Yeah, sorry.
Mark
carry
has
on
a lot of
story.
Words and we accept them. With
yes. That's
all
fine.
Words.
Yes. That's
Thank
fine.
You.
Where was I? I was about.
You were telling me
we were moving a lot, right?
You were moving a lot.
So back to my story. So I had me and my mom were traveling through bus. So literally, I know LA like from the back of my hand. Like I don't
I
need
can attest for that.
I don't need no GPS. I don't need you know Siri to tell me where to go. Like I know where to go.
I do,
and I'm thankful for that. You know, another thing is growing up. I actually worked when I was 16. I started working when I was 16. I joined the program for because we were in welfare and they had a summer program for people with low income. And
if your kids are on welfare, you gotta put them to work.
Yeah, definitely. I started a program. It was a summer program for work for people with low income. So I started working when I was 16 while going to school, and then I started working straight from. I was even working when I was in high school too. I was despachando tacos.
Oh.
I was a taquero. That was in the Tres Amigos Mall right there in South Central.
Oh my God,
yeah.
Really?
Yes.
That's the spot.
That's the spot. I started there, and then after that, I just started working. Like, I didn't even have time to go to school because yeah. My mom was, she got hurt at work. So it was hard having, my income was the only income basically coming in, you know. So I can really say that I didn't have a childhood, you know.
Yeah.
So and I'm okay with that though. Like I'm thankful because it made me to the man who I am now. You know what I mean? So
there definitely is like growth and
yeah, there,
learning that comes from hardship.
There is, and you know that brings me back to the how did my ancestors do it? You know what I mean? Like the people in the field, how they started when they were kids. They had their kids working in the fields. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's. It was difficult. Like I feel for those kids as well.
Yeah. So it's something that you don't want even for us. Like my son, you know, my kids are going to be, what is it, second generation, third generation?
No, they're second generation.
Second generation. I mean, whatever. They're just labels, but that you want to know. It's like you want your kids to know about quote unquote the struggle. But at the same time, you wouldn't wish it on anyone.
Yeah.
And so you do have to. And so that's.
But I mean, there's one thing talking to them about it, and yeah. There's one thing
showing them. So and so because we can, I mean, that's would be my. For let's talk about Mexicans specifically. Like, we have to talk about if we're, you know, we can critique the systems as well, but we can do it internally as well and critique ourselves and critique our culture, and that it is machista, it is sexist. I mean, as much as I love the Mexican national team, you know, what they always yell, stubborn.
Where'd you point at me? Totally kidding.
No, but it's just what they yell and
savage.
Yeah, that was good. You threw me off there. But we have to talk about that. We have to also talk about and deal with our own racism.
Yeah.
And the idea that
we're even racist to our own people.
So that's the thing. So
I'm
this
very
is my
dark,
critique.
And I grew up like with a very like.
Right.
Very aware of how dark I am.
How dark you
yeah,
are. Because that's one of the
thing for you.
Yeah.
My mom would always tell me, like, don't be in the sun so much. Like, te vas a poner negro.
Te vas a poner negro.
And I would literally try not. Like, I started wearing long sleeves in the summer. And,
yeah.
Like, me ponía crema. And, like, because I didn't want to be black because that was a bad thing.
Right.
And, like, now
so,
I'm just like, I'm going to roll my windows down in my car. And I'm going to spend as much time in the sun as I can. Like,
yeah,
I don't care.
Brown pride.
Brown is beautiful.
Brown is beautiful. So, and so that's, those are the things that we have to talk about as well. Because... So and that's one of the things that I wonder sometimes. It's do we Are we mad at these systems because we don't get to profit from them, because we don't get to have the power in them, or do we not want these systems to exist? Like, you know what I mean? The concept, and one of the things that, you know, in one of my seminary classes that hit me was, you know, the idea of powers and principalities and how they tempt us. Like, you know, for Pentecostals, you think, oh, it's just a demon. It's something, you know, that you don't see, that it doesn't hurt you, that it may or may not, you know, possess you. But when you really see what he meant, you know, the powers and principalities and these things that... So, like, one of the examples my professor used was, you wouldn't kill for your phone company. You know, if Sprint gave you a gun and said, I need you to go kill all the Verizon people so that we can get better coverage, you're going to say no. But a lot of us would kill for our country. Mm-hmm. A lot of us would kill for a street. I mean, people kill for streets. A lot of people would kill for a color. And so this is how, when we get our identity from things, when we get our identity from things that are created, you know, and I'm not, like, this isn't me. I'm saying for us to look at all that, because we're talking about these systems that hurt us and kill people. And at the same time, we have to look at ourselves as well. And we have to, because it's both and. We have to grow up, we have to change, we have to, you know, I had to deal with my, you know, racism, my sexism, my, all that stuff, because you see it in other people. And so that's the desire, is it, you want these people, you want everyone that's, for lack of a better word, possessed by these things to be free. Yeah. And be human, be fully human. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not trying to, like, you know, start a religious debate or anything with you, but
no.
Like,
I mean,
do you know what I mean? Like, because we're talking about borders, we're talking about walls, we're talking about a piece of paper,
right?
That literally gives you a piece of paper
that makes or breaks your life,
right? Or like even like money, like it's a piece of paper, it's right. A number, it's an these are imaginary things that, sure, they're useful. Mm-hmm. To have things in order, you should have systems to be able to distribute things and to be able to be organized. But when they start becoming, you can't live here on this side, and you can't live a full life because because you live on that side, yeah. Or because you have a piece of paper or you don't. And that's what I mean in regards to how those things can possess you. I mean, there's no better word for it. That's the word. Whatever you want to, like. It takes you out of being human. You know what I mean? Anyways, I'll stop. But it just got me thinking about that because of that. It got me thinking about what we're talking about. So I guess this is a part where we do an altar call and somebody can the band come up? I'm kidding.
We got the singer.
This is my point of exit. This is where I exit.
What is it?
We got the worship leader here.
What is it? I'd like to un corito, por favor.
I got you on the beat.
Yeah.
What was the one? The
which one?
I don't know. There was always one song that we would sing for the altar call, but in Spanish, I forgot. Anyways, otro día, una de Jesús y Romero, some other day. That's a joke for you. I don't know.
That one?
But yeah, so that's
it.
It
was Carrie Underwood.
Carrie Underwood?
Was it?
There was a song that we used to play in youth that was by Carrie Underwood, which but one? I never knew the name of it.
Oh, you just knew. How did it go?
I don't remember.
Can you sing it?
It was something about Jesus and loving everybody and...
But it was an altar call.
It was
so
an altar call song.
Yeah. So let's all.
You say bow our heads.
No, let's all bow our heads. No, I say let's all. It was a bad joke. Let's all repent of our internalized racism and
our participation and the way that we benefit from these systems.
Yes. Amen. Well, thank you. Gracias, everybody. And
thank you, Marcus, for
thank you for helping us out and sharing your story and opening it up.
Thank you, guys.
We really appreciate it, and let's help those dreamers out. And there's always something to do and some way to help. So we'll post some links so everybody can get involved.
Hopefully, we can pick some pictures too.
Yeah, we'll try to get some pictures of stuff.
I'll share some pictures from tomorrow's march.
Yeah,
what time is it?
It's at 3 p.m. in MacArthur Park.
Okay. At what? 3 to what?
3 to 7. It's very short.
Okay, so we'll post some pictures on our Spanglish Seminary Instagram as well, and yeah, so check it out. All right, thanks everyone.
Have a good night.